This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon. Israel's military says its planes have attacked some 400 Hamas targets across the Gaza Strip since fighting resumed yesterday. CBS's Robert Berger in Jerusalem says Israel blames Hamas for breaking the temporary truce by resuming attacks and for the breakdown in negotiations aimed at extending the fragile ceasefire.
Israel hopes that the new offensive will put pressure on Hamas to release the 136 hostages still in captivity. And as a first step, Israel is demanding the release of the remaining women and children. But Hamas is pushing for a broader deal that would win the release of thousands of Palestinian prisoners.
Vice President Kamala Harris is attending the COP28 climate summit in Dubai, where she outlined the Biden administration's ongoing efforts to combat global warming.
Today, across the United States, we are building and expanding hundreds of solar panel, wind turbine, electric vehicle, and battery manufacturing plants.
Some 150 world leaders are attending the climate summit in the United Arab Emirates. A series of storms is pushing through the Pacific Northwest, bringing heavy rain and snow. Bob Orovic is at the National Weather Service with the details.
Anywhere from the Cascade Mountains of Washington and Oregon westward to the coast. Heavy rains at the lower elevations and some heavy snows at the higher elevations, especially in the Cascades. So for the next week, the rivers are going to be getting very high. There could be some river flooding. And there's also going to be some potential for, obviously, travel disruptions from the rain and from the higher elevation snows.
A five-time medalist for the U.S. Olympic swim team who pleaded guilty to participating in the January 6th insurrection has been sentenced to probation and community service.
40-year-old Cleet Keller is a 6'6" former Olympian who won two gold medals on the same relay team as Michael Phelps. A week after the riot, during which he wore an Olympic jacket, he was charged with a felony. He joined the mob and physically blocked police from clearing the area, while at the same time he yelled expletives about congressional leaders. He's been sentenced to 6 months of house arrest, 3 years of supervised release, and 360 hours of community service. Christopher Cruz, CBS News, Washington.
A search is underway for a possible serial killer targeting homeless people in Los Angeles. Here's Police Chief Michael Moore.
The description we have is a lone individual who we believe to be male, who we believe to be wearing some type of a hoodie of simple clothing. We're very, very limited right now. We have no eyewitnesses at this point that I'm aware of.
Three homeless people were killed in separate shootings this week alone. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
For the ones who get it done.
When I first had my baby, I'd get comments all the time about how happy I must be. I remember thinking, I want to be happy. Why don't I feel that way? It was hard to admit that, even to my doctor. But I'm glad I did. She told me it was postpartum depression, and that is very treatable. These days, things are feeling good, and we're both happy.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. New research shows more people are dying because of air pollution from coal-fired power plants than once thought. As Mike Moan reports, environmentalists in Wisconsin hope the study spurs quicker action to curb emissions.
The study, led by experts at a handful of U.S. universities, found that over the past two decades, there were 460,000 premature deaths nationally associated with fine particulate matter sent into the air from coal-fired power plants. That's more than what health and scientific communities had previously thought. Kieran Gallagher with the group Clean Wisconsin says while coal facilities are being phased out, utilities and policymakers should speed up the energy transition.
A lot of wind and solar is being added to the electricity grid every day, which is really exciting to see in Wisconsin, across the Midwest, and it just needs to ramp up faster.
Utilities around the U.S. have announced emissions goals, but some companies contend certain fossil fuels can't be completely put to rest right away because of electricity demands while cleaner sources are added. But Gallagher says the regulatory scene in states like Wisconsin makes it easier for utilities to move the goalposts. She's hopeful stricter standards being weighed by the federal EPA will prompt stronger commitments. Gallagher has analyzed the proposed regulations and says that in Wisconsin, they could result in nearly $50 million in broader health benefits by reducing the impact of respiratory illnesses and cardiovascular disease.
$50 million is a massive benefit for Wisconsinites to see in health benefits from good closed coal plants in our state.
Meanwhile, study authors show that the rate of deaths from coal pollution began to slow as more plants were being shut down. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 30s. For tonight, some rain and snow. We'll see a low around 30 degrees, less than a half inch of snow accumulation. Some rain-snow mix for your Sunday, cloudy skies with a high near 37. Monday, mostly cloudy with a high near 39. Currently, 17 degrees.
You're tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin.
Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk.
This is 93.5. The Tap.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel, and this is our Saturday morning broadcast. It is Saturday, December 2nd, 2023. This is our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of those most important news events, those stories, those occurrences, those happenings in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for joining me this hour, and hopefully next hour as well, as we examine all of that and more. As always, we have an ambitious but very much achievable agenda, a syllabus for you this morning. I am joined in the studios here of Civic Media in downtown Waukesha by my wonderful producer this morning. His name is Greg, and together we're also taking your phone calls throughout this hour and next hour as well. That phone number, as you know, is 844-967-2789. Also on the Civic Media website, go on the app, find Civic Media, pull down your particular broadcast station, find Morning Cannolis, and send us a note. Greg and I are loving to take your comments, your questions, especially your inquiries about things that we're talking about this morning, as always here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Delighted and honored that you have set aside some time on this Saturday morning, the first Saturday in December, to spend some time in discussion, in consumption with us, of these major news stories that affect our lives and our livelihoods here in the state of Wisconsin and throughout the United States of America. I mentioned that, as always, our agenda is a big one, chock full of a lot of things happening, lots of things to cover from just this past week and beyond. And we always ask, in connection with our ambitious but achievable agenda, three major questions. What are those questions? Those questions are these. First, what happened? What do we know? What are the facts of the events, the circumstances that are animating our discussions these mornings? Second, why are those things important? Why should we care? Why are they significant? Why are they meaningful and material to our lives today, in the past, and also in the future? And finally, in many instances, what should we do about those things? How should we react? How might we react? What are our options across the political aisles? What kinds of things should we think about in terms of reactions and answers to those major issues, those events, those circumstances that are animating our lives every single week? I mentioned once again that we do have a lot to cover this morning, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about our syllabus this morning and then go back and spend some major time in the first segments of this first hour talking about yet another icon who we lost just this past week. Her name, of course, Sandra Day O'Connor, an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court for nearly 25 years, a quarter century. We do some reminiscing about who she was and specifically talk about not only her legacy, focusing on two particular cases and the importance of those cases to this day, and then also focusing beyond that upon the personal side, the individual side, the human side of Sandra Day O'Connor. Some stories we're going to talk about engaging with Thurgood Marshall and yes, also other members of the Supreme Court when she was on that high court during the course of her 25 years. That includes her great friend, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We're going to get to that memorial, that discussion in just a few moments. But as always, we also have a lot of news to focus on, lots of things to comment about, and to solicit your questions on throughout our broadcast this morning. Those kinds of things include these, some major decisions just this past week, including just yesterday, in connection with the continuing litigation involving our former president and present candidate for the presidency of the United States of America. His name, of course, is Donald Trump. Three major appeals court and district court decisions coming out just in the past several days that have a dramatic impact upon the circumstances, the ways in which those cases will be litigated in the weeks, the months, and yes, indeed, the years ahead here in our federal and our state courts going ahead in the coming weeks and years. Those cases, the subjects of our discussion right after we talk about Sandra Day O'Connor this morning. Then we're going to talk about two other major events, as we sometimes do. We're going to take a look at one of the convictions, the sentences imposed upon one of the January 6th insurrection rioters. We're going to chat about the significance of that, as we sometimes do, the deterrent effect that it should have upon all Americans when they should think about possibly engaging that kind of violent behavior once again. This particular defendant, notorious and famous in our recent history, our sports history in America, we'll talk about the things that he said following his sentencing just this past week in the Federal District Court in the District of Columbia. And then we're also going to turn to another instance of violence that has made its way into our federal court by virtue of an indictment returned by a federal grand jury, an indictment that alleges an attempt to commit homicide, murder, an attempt unsuccessfully, thank you, and thankfully, here in the United States of America, against a Sikh separatist living here, advocating for the separation of a particular Sikh state, the province of Punjab in India, advocating that for that pursuant to the First Amendment here in the United States of America, a plot that was discovered by our federal law enforcement authorities and thwarted and stopped here, that has reminiscence of and mirrors of a similar type event that happened in Canada. We'll talk about all of that, the connection between India and attempts, at least one attempt, perhaps one other successful attempt in Canada, to go after people who are advocating for Sikh separatism in the state of India, the country of India, the largest republic on the state, on the face of our planet, the most populous, almost most populous nation on our planet. And then we're going to spend a lot of time principally in our second hour this morning, talking a huge amount about the Supreme Court once again, not only in memory of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but also talking about the significant things that will be happening in the coming week. The Supreme Court going to be taking up a number of additional cases for oral argument. You can hear those. You can digest those. You can consume the things that the Supreme Court justices are quizzing the attorneys about. By going online, you can pull down those transcripts. You can listen to them live and also recorded. And we're also going to chat centrally about a major oral argument of just this past week in what I believe is one of the most significant series of cases pending right now before the United States Supreme Court, that having to do with what's called in the political arena the administrative state, our agencies, our federal agencies that make our government work, that make it go, that ensure that in all ways, important and perhaps sometimes even unimportant, our government is functioning. A focus by the Supreme Court through three different cases, one of which was argued centrally this week, having to do with the legitimacy of our federal agencies, their constitutionality, this one in particular focusing upon the future, the viability, the constitutional provisions, and the operations of, yes, that's right, the Securities and Exchange Commission, been around for 90 years, almost a complete century. now called into question by the United States Supreme Court whether or not one who appears before the SEC, someone who has been the subject of an investigation and, yes, the imposition of penalties by virtue of findings by the SEC, whether you have a right to a jury trial before the SEC, that's also before the Supreme Court just this past week. I want to talk about what the Supreme Court justices said in response and read some of the tea leaves about what the Supreme Court may do when it comes to May, June, perhaps even July of next year, rendering its decision on this major case and two other cases, one of which we also previously discussed involving the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and a big one coming up in mid-January, a major oral argument in mid-January on a larger issue having to do with the relationship between our federal courts and the ways in which our federal agencies work, whether there should be deference, whether there should be a sense of acknowledging the expertise inside our federal agencies by our federal judiciary in areas where scientists and mathematicians and medical people and educators and engineers and all the kinds of people who make our lives go, whether there should be some understanding that their expertise is worth something and should be deferred to when, in fact, the legislation passed by the Congress is perhaps not as complete as it should be. And we defer to those agencies to give us direction and even counsel and even a sense of where we're going when it comes to interpreting the law in America. We're going to talk about all of that in our second hour this morning. All of that also inviting to you, making this invitation to you to be engaged in our conversation. That is a conversation that you can involve us in. You can be involved in. That phone number is 844-967-2789. Greg and I here in the studios of Civic Media, delighted to take your phone calls as we go ahead and also soliciting your comments. You can even write to me and write to Greg. Tell us what you think. Articulate your question in writing, and we'll pull that up as well and respond to that throughout our broadcast this morning. Delighted to have you with us remotely. Delighted to have you being a part of our conversation about law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. All of that hugely important. I indicated that as a part of our aggressive but achievable agenda this morning that we necessarily need to, it is appropriate to, should talk about Sandra Day O'Connor. Sandra Day O'Connor, born in 1930, left us, departed us this past week, 2023. A remarkable life. Last week we talked about former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. In many ways, Sandra Day O'Connor also, like Rosalynn Carter, an icon in American history, changed America to the good, to the profoundly good, when it comes to understanding not just the role that women should in fact play in all aspects of our lives, but the critically important things that people like Sandra Day O'Connor and, yes, Rosalynn Carter bring to the deliberation about major issues in our nation, the significance of their contributions, the leadership, the insight, the direction that they give to all of us who are interested in ensuring that our America proceeds in a land of justice and peace. Sandra Day O'Connor embodying all of that as well. This icon, 25 years on the federal bench in Washington, D.C., changing the ways in which we think about the judiciary. We're going to talk not only about her legacy right after this first break, but also talking about a couple of additional cases that regrettably have been overturned that she had not only her fingerprints all over, but she authored, and the consequences of the overturning of those cases in recent times. Stay with us for that important discussion right after this first break.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15 with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at EasterSeals.com.
93.5 The Tap. K. 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 K.
K. My mama told me, you better shop around. Oh, yeah, you better shop.
We are back here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you once again for joining me and my wonderful producer, Greg, here in the studios of Civic Media, taking your phone calls this morning, as always, at 844-967-2789. You could also go on the Civic Media app, find us, send us your questions, specifically your inquiries about things that we are chatting about this morning. We're going to spend much of this segment of our Saturday morning show talking about Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman on the United States Supreme Court appointed by former President Ronald Reagan, taking the office in 1981, an awful lot of focus these days upon the significance of that. And yes, indeed, it was a significant event in American history, in human history, that in our nation in 1981, the first woman, long, long overdue, takes her proper seat on the United States Supreme Court. About 116, 120 justices of our Supreme Court throughout our history. And to this day, only six of them, only six, have been women. Sandra Day O'Connor led that movement of ensuring that there is more representation. Still not enough historically and presently on our Supreme Court, but we're moving in that right direction. And she initiated that. She initiated when Ronald Reagan tapped her from an Arizona appeals court where she had been practicing first as a lawyer. She was also a legislator there, and then on the bench there, and then on the bench, establishing a reputation even then back in Arizona as someone of intelligence and thought and focus on justice, the kinds of things that we discuss here on this radio program always. Let's talk more about who she was, the kinds of things that she brought to the high court during the 25 years, the quarter century that she was there on our court. It's fair to say that very little could have happened without Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's support, her encouragement when it came to the very polarizing issues, even then, 1980s, 1990s, the first years of this century as well, on very important issues involving all sorts of things. Affirmative action, which we'll get back to in just a moment. Abortion, also a major voice in that area as well, voting rights, religion, federalism, the role between the federal government and state governments, other things involving sex discrimination, immutable characteristics, all kinds of things, interpreting our federal laws on her docket during those times. Many other hot button subjects of that time that remain a part of our discussion to this day. Sandra Day O'Connor at the core of much of that, because of the middle ground that she staked out and a middle ground that was acknowledged in what was, even at that time, a polarized and polarizing America and a court that sometimes reflected that as well. That middle ground that she always looked for resulted in a justice that was promoting and identifying in her opinions, in the questions that she asked from the bench, a justice who was interested in ensuring, again, justice, the promotion of the rule of law. Along the way, it was no coincidence that given the fact that she was very much aware of her place in history, not only as the first woman, but also as this person who understood the role of a Supreme Court justice, that at a regular basis, she looked to current events. And even, yes, that's right, the public mood in getting a sense of where the nation was and understanding not necessarily that the Supreme Court should reflect completely what polls or what the public says the Supreme Court should do, but nonetheless understanding that the Supreme Court lives in contemporary times. She would be the kind of person who today would tell you that even our Constitution needs to be a living Constitution, one that reflects where America is, ever-changing, ever-evolving. We would like to think in America forever moving toward a place of greater understanding, greater due process, greater equal protection, all those things promised by our founding fathers. She was a part of that. As a part of the things that she commented about later in a book that she called The Majesty of the Law, Reflections of a Supreme Court Justice, which is a collection of her essays. It was published in 2003. She could have staked out that middle ground, and she said this. She said, rare indeed is the legal victory. Rare indeed is the legal victory in court or legislature that is not a careful byproduct of an emerging social consensus. An emerging social consensus. That's the Sandra Day O'Connor that we remember so very, very well. We know as well that during the course of her term, she was the principal author again and the principal architect of many major cases. And along the way, again, scoping out this ground that was identified by many as being an incrementalist, that is, moving in support of where America is, where it should be, incrementally to ensure that the law not only adopts and reflects where we are as a nation, but sometimes also leads in those areas too. She's called this incrementalist because she was not a believer, as we have seen in some of the Supreme Court decisions of recent times, in major reversals, 40-year, 50-year reversals of tradition and scope in America. She believed in movement that reflected the understanding of our American population as it too moved toward a greater codification and embracing of who we are as a nation. Let's talk about a couple of those cases. And regrettably, let's also talk about the rescission of some of the things that she wrote about when it comes to these two major cases. Again, many, many other things we could spend a lot of time talking about. I encourage you to take a closer look at her entire corpus of decisions that she rendered while she was on the Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor. I'm going to talk about two of them. We have spoken a lot on this broadcast about a case called Roe versus Wade, 1973, Harry Blackmun, a justice on the bench long before Sandra Day O'Connor was there, writes this landmark decision, finding that, yes, inside the Constitution of our United States of America is this privacy right, a privacy right first established by Griswold versus Connecticut. In this instance, in Roe versus Wade, that privacy right takes its codification. It inhabits the right to abortion. It inhabits the right to reproductive rights, and that's what the Supreme Court identifies in 1973. It establishes a framework that Sandra Day O'Connor revisits in 1992 in a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992, a landmark decision of the Supreme Court, again, years after the 1973 decision in Roe versus Wade, in which the court once again upheld, reaffirmed that right to an abortion as established in what it called the essential holding of Roe versus Wade. This was authored in many ways by Sandra Day O'Connor. She was the one who articulated this view once again a couple of decades after Roe versus Wade, and established and issued as the key judgment in this case called Casey, the restoration of the undue burden standard when evaluating what are called state-imposed restrictions on that right. Where does that come from? What does that all mean? Well, it turns out that in the wake of Roe versus Wade in 1973, establishing this privacy right under our Constitution, the next attack on that privacy right was not so much of an attack frontal on it, but rather on the side, collateral attack upon it, based upon the notion that access to it could be a way of limiting abortion in the states of our country. And so many, many attempts by others who are not in favor of the decision in Roe versus Wade to attack it again collaterally by saying, we will restrict access to the right that we know you have. And so the case in Casey arose this way. It arose from a challenge to five different provisions of a Pennsylvania Abortion Control Act of 1982. Among those provisions were requirements, for example, for a waiting period before you could get an abortion, special notice, other things like that, which we're going to talk about as we come back after this next break. Tell you more about Casey, tell you more about how it is that Sandra Day O'Connor responded to that in a landmark case in 19.
Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5 The Tap. Online at thetap.fm.
CBS News Brief. Arnold Schwarzenegger is standing by Israel, hosting a meeting in Santa Monica with family members of some of the hostages held by Hamas.
When something like this happens, I feel personally that we have to speak out.
Vice President Kamala Harris speaking out in Dubai about climate change.
This is a pivotal moment. Our action collectively, or worse, our inaction, will impact billions of people for decades to come.
Some 150 world leaders are attending the COP28 climate summit. It's called an atmospheric river, and it certainly doesn't sound good.
Stronger to severe thunderstorms as we go throughout the day, lower Mississippi Valley, some of this causing flooding. We also have flood watches in effect for portions of Louisiana on over towards the panhandle of Florida.
That's the Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass with that report. CBS News Brief, I'm Linda Kenyon.
It's a showdown in Madison. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team is facing a big challenge. They host the Marquette Golden Eagles at the Kohl Center in Madison. The Badgers have won four straight. They're 5-2 so far this season. Marquette is 6-1 and ranked number 3 in the nation. NFL, the Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday Night Football at Lambeau Field. Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed been dealing with a chest injury. He's questionable. The Packers' young receivers have been meeting every Tuesday on their day off to get a jump on the game planning. I asked Reed what they get out of those meetings.
Meeting on Tuesdays with each other. Like I said, we've been doing that the past few weeks. And I just think that helped tremendously, just us understanding where everyone is coming from. We're seeing everything from the same eye when we go out there and play our opponent. We show development, the way we prepare, like, you know, we practice hard, we feel much better executing. Small little penalties aren't happening as much anymore, so it's definitely that.
As Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 30s. For tonight, some rain and snow. We'll see a low around 30 degrees, less than a half inch of snow accumulation. Some rain-snow mix for your Sunday. Cloudy skies with a high near 37. Monday, mostly cloudy with a high near 39.
Right now, it's 19.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Timeout!
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
If anyone knows what's on tap,
It's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5, The Tap, UK. UK.
We are back here on our Saturday morning broadcast, spending some time thinking about the legacy of Sandra Day O'Connor, significant, hugely significant person on the Supreme Court in the history of America, whose legacy also altered by what happened after she was on the Supreme Court, including some major decisions of the very person who took her place. We're going to get to that in just a few moments or so. Right before the break, we're talking about this major case that she did, in fact, issue, the principal author of a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey, in which there was a challenge to the Pennsylvania Abortion Control Act of 1982, requiring that certain steps be taken before you can get access to abortion in the state of Pennsylvania, including a waiting period, spousal notice, parental consent for minors, those kinds of things. And in a plurality opinion, it was Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, along with Anthony Kennedy and David Souter, that the Supreme Court upheld once again this essential holding of Roe that did in fact say that under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment and generally in our Constitution, the woman's right to have an abortion prior to fetal viability is in fact established. Now, the court in Casey overturned the Roe trimester framework that had been established way back in 1973 in favor of this viability analysis, which remained the law of the land until 2022. And why it did that? Because it allowed states then to implement abortion restrictions that apply during the first trimester of pregnancy that to ensure that the law, in fact, reflects the trimesters, but also that there's this focus upon viability. And in its key judgment, the court overturned Roe's strict scrutiny standard of review of those restrictions, and in particular established this undue burden standard. The author of that was Sandra Day O'Connor. And under that rubric, under that standard, the restrictions on the abortion right would be constitutional or unconstitutional when they were enacted for the purpose or effect of placing a substantial obstacle in the path of a woman seeking an abortion of a non-viable fetus. That was Sandra Day O'Connor and others writing in 1992. That case, the Casey case, along, of course, with Roe versus Wade, remained the law of this land until when? Until 2022. And it is an ironic aspect of our American history that following her retirement, she was replaced on the bench by a justice named Sam Alito. Sam Alito, who remains on the bench to this day. And Sam Alito, 18 months ago, was the author, the principal author of the majority opinion that overruled both Roe versus Wade and also Casey, this wonderful, important, significant statement by Sandra Day O'Connor about privacy rights in America. Sam Alito, the very person who overturned that decision of the Supreme Court written by Sandra Day O'Connor, followed her in that very spot. In the wake of her retirement, she was asked various times by some not only law enforcement folks, people who were in journalism, focusing upon the administration of the law, but also by journalists as well. And the question was whether or not she was in any way upset or concerned by what was identified as this significant shift away from what she had articulated. And the response that came back from Sandra Day O'Connor was, what would you feel? What would you feel? And she talked about the fact that her cases, her decisions, at least in this and one other matter, which we'll also talk about now, were being dismantled by the court. And indeed, that is a part of the history in the wake of this important work by Sandra Day O'Connor. We've got a wonderful text from Jeff in Sherwood who notes just that. He writes in to Greg and me, says, you know, she was impactful, she was reasonable, and she was justice-based. And while, yes, indeed, that's right, she did leave the court principally because she wanted to take care of her ailing husband. Jeff notes the irony once again that she was followed in that position by Sam Alito, who ended up overturning, by virtue of his pen, the very things, many traditions that she'd established on the court. Jeff, appreciate that very good commentary coming to us from Shorewood this morning as well. There's a second case I also want to talk about because it reflects upon other things that we've chatted about here on our Saturday morning broadcast. And that is affirmative action. It follows in many ways. It follows in many ways the same history that we saw when it came to Casey, and it's being overturned in the Dobbs decision in June of 2022. This case is a case called Grutter versus Bollinger. It's in 2003, again, a landmark case of the Supreme Court way back then concerning what? Concerning affirmative action in student admissions. Does that sound familiar? It should. It should. The court held that a student admissions process that favors underrepresented minority groups, the way that they described the petitioners, the plaintiffs in this case, a group that would be identified in that category did not in fact violate the Constitution, the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, so long as this process, this admission process, took into account other factors evaluated by an admissions officer, an admissions policy group, other people reviewing applications of candidates for admission. That was Grutter versus Bollinger in 2003, 20 years ago. And that decision, of course, you may recall another decision called Bakke back in 1978 that allowed race to be also considered, but held that racial quotas, you can't specifically identify a quota and affiliate that with a particular race. That was found unconstitutional in Bakke. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor built on Bakke, built upon the tradition of America in the Constitution and Grutter versus Bollinger 20 years ago in finding that student admissions could in fact be predicated in part upon a consideration of race. And of course, we know well what happened there as well. The case coming out of the University of Michigan alleged that the particular prospective student had been denied admission because the school gave certain minority groups a significantly greater chance of admission. The school admitted at the time that its admission process did favor certain minority groups, but argued that there was a compelling state interest to ensure a critical mass of students from minority groups. And indeed, Sandra Day O'Connor picked up on just that in her opinion. She said there's something good and right and decent that comes from people sitting in the same classroom with you when they look different from than you do. They may have different experiences than the ones that you have had. And she said as long as the prohibitions of the law generally are there, there's nothing that prohibits an admissions council from reviewing candidacies based in part upon race and focused in particular that those admissions decisions can further a compelling interest in obtaining the educational benefits, she described them, that flow from a diverse student body. Shades of Brown versus Board of Education, also a part of our nation's history. The race conscious admissions policies, again, in Grutter versus Bollinger, should be limited in time, interestingly, she said. She talked about the possibility that in 25 years from now, maybe the use of racial preferences will no longer be necessary. That language invoked more recently by the Supreme Court in overturning Grutter versus Bollinger, turning back the thoughtful and insightful things that Justice Sandra Day O'Connor articulated back in 2003, overturning that case 2023 in a case called Students for Fair Admissions of Harvard versus Harvard and North Carolina. That case finding that is in fact unconstitutional. These affirmative action programs violated the Due Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And so just like the case Planned Parenthood overturning the abortion decision in Roe versus Wade, Grutter versus Bollinger, overturned recently by our United States Supreme Court. Interesting history as a part of all of this moving forward. I would offer in those areas and others that we have discussed, not a movement in the right direction. Sandra Day O'Connor was someone who's moving us as a nation in a greater embracing of the incremental movements that we should have in the country. Sometimes, yes, requiring more broad movements, bringing us sometimes even dragging and kicking into a better land, a better understanding of who we all are. But she advanced that purpose in recent years, our Supreme Court turning back,
turning back on some of that tradition. Let's talk more about who she was and what she did along the way after her retirement, while the time that she was talking and observing this dismantling of some portions, not all, but some portions of her legacy. She was a visiting judge in many appeals courts around the country. She was advocating not only for judicial independence, a big source of her concern, not only in the time on the bench, but also in the wake of her time there, but also focusing on what we'd focus on here on this broadcast of Civic Media, and that is civics, doing education, ensuring that whatever your politics are, whatever your partisan prerogatives may be, wherever you may lie on the political scale, if you will, the geography of a partisan politics, if it is that in your own lives, that civics are the way to understand the world in which we live. An informed electorate, she often talked about, is one that votes wisely and that brings to the polling booth wisdom when it comes to selecting representatives. That was her focus in the many years since the time that she was on the bench. When she was on the bench, Sandra Day O'Connor consistently was the one who often jumped in at the start, very often the first to speak, asking counsel things like, is your case properly in this court? Why shouldn't we dismiss it as moot, as overcome by the facts, maybe even the law? She would ask attorneys almost immediately, what gives your case, your client, standing? Something we've chatted about a lot during the course of our discussion here on this broadcast. Justice Anthony Kennedy described her with great admiration as a pragmatist. Again, this person who understood what's going on out there in the world, but also brought that to her decisions. He defined her as paying attention to real-world consequences, something we need a lot of on every court of this land, but certainly the Supreme Court to this day. Justice Kennedy wrote in a tribute published after retirement that she was grounded in real experience, Two other reminiscences about Sandra Day O'Connor, one having to do with Justice Marshall, the other having to do with Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was, of course, on the bench when she was there with Justice Thurgood Marshall. And even following his retirement in 1991, she offered a hint that her own views on racial justice were evolving because of her involvement, her partnership, even her friendship with Thurgood Marshall. In an essay that she wrote for the Stanford Law Review, Justice O'Connor described the impact of serving with that civil rights giant for 10 years on the bench. She said when she was sitting there at the conference table, listening to him describe the experience of his life, she was animated. That changed her as a human being. And she went on to say that his stories always had a point. She said, a constantly pushing and prodding us, including her, to respond not only to the persuasiveness of particular legal arguments, the things that lawyers love to talk about, but also to the power of what she described as moral truth. Moral truth, that's Sandra Day O'Connor talking about Thurgood Marshall. She added that she found herself listening to Justice Marshall's voice, hoping to hear just once more another story that would by and by perhaps change the way that I saw the world. That coming from Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. And then a final story having to do with her great friendship with the second woman who took the bench with her on the United States Supreme Court. And her name, of course, is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. For many years, Ruth Bader Ginsburg alone on the court as the only woman there. But we know that many years, about 11 years after the appointment of Ruth Bader, Sandra Day O'Connor was there for 11 years. She's joined by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She becomes, again, the second woman on the high court at that time. Nominated by Bill Clinton, 1993, Justice Ginsburg undeniably drew heavily on Justice O'Connor's opinion in many cases, including a major case in 1996 declaring unconstitutional an all-male admissions policy of a state-supported military college, the Virginia Military Institute, a major case in Supreme Court history. Justice O'Connor was visibly misty-eyed during the ceremony. Justice Ginsburg took judicial office. She said this. She said, "I can tell you how happy I was. I can't tell you how happy I was when I took the when she came to the court." She said, "It makes a night and day difference to have women on the bench. Indeed, it does. Indeed, it does." Sandra Day O'Connor, a lion, an icon in American history. We remember her this day.
You're
Cincinnati's 93.5, The Tap.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Saturday morning broadcast, spending some time in this, our first hour of our broadcast, talking all about Sandra Day O'Connor, promising some discussion also about major events in this segment. And then in our second hour, beginning at 10 a.m., shortly after 10 a.m. this morning, turning to those major events. I am in the studios here with Civic Media, along with my wonderful producer, Greg. We're taking your phone calls, as always, at 844-967-2789. Also taking your texts, your comments about our broadcast this morning, especially your questions. One final story, a humorous story about Sandra Day O'Connor, this wonderful human being. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg took the court, it was not uncommon, unbelievably, for some of the male lawyers who were arguing before the court to have difficulty telling them apart. They looked nothing alike, of course, nor did they sound alike at all. But those frequent mix-ups reported by many people, journalists of the court, and even recorded to this day, those mix-ups, even by highly experienced members of the court, prompted the two, at that time, women, female members of our Supreme Court to do this. At one point, inspired by these problems that some of the male attorneys had in distinguishing the two of this, they appeared at a reception for female judges. They were sporting complimentary T-shirts. One of them said, "I'm Ruth, not Sandra." That, of course, being worn by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The other one, "I'm Sandra, not Ruth," being worn, of course, by Sandra Day O'Connor. And they spent the entire event wearing those T-shirts as a way of, once again, underscoring not only the silliness of what was going on from time to time in that very formal setting, but also affirming, I would say today, the importance of diversity on our bench, certainly gender diversity, racial diversity, all kinds of mutable characteristics, and bringing in, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg did, as the other four members of the Supreme Court, who are also females, to this day also bring to that bench some diversity in perspective. We may disagree with them from time to time. That's a part of our national history. That's a part of our tradition. That is a part of why we are America. But we always look to our Supreme Court justices to provide the kind of insight and the direction and the inspiration that was a part of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and especially Sandra Day O'Connor. We remember her today as an icon in our American history. In many ways, what Ruth Bader Ginsburg was all about was the rule of law. And indeed, there were some major events just this past week coming out of the lower federal courts, not the Supreme Court. We're going to get to that in our second hour. But a number of different decisions coming out of our lower courts, including a state court in New York. We recall well that right now pending in a Manhattan state court is this civil litigation brought by the attorney general there, Letitia James, against the Trump Organization, Donald Trump, his family members, alleging improper, violative accounting when it comes to the valuation of properties. And you recall well that during the course of this litigation, Donald Trump, principally outside of the court, but not exclusively, has attacked the court, in particular, the court's clerk,
suggesting in some postings that she has a relationship with a member of Congress. His name is Chuck Schumer, the majority leader in the United States Senate, that causing the presiding judge, Judge Arthur Engoron, to impose what was referred to as a gag order, again, language I'm not embracing because it suggests that there's a violation of First Amendment rights. He imposed an order telling him to knock it off. You can't be attacking court staff, especially when Donald Trump does not understand even what the court clerk is doing in terms of support of the judge. Well, that decision to tell him to stop commenting outside of court about the court staff has prompted a couple of things. One is because of Donald Trump's comments, we know now from just this past week that the court staff receiving phone calls, 20 to 30 calls a day sometimes, 30 to 50 messages daily on social media, threatening, haranguing the court staff because of what Donald Trump has said out there, prompting once again Judge Engoron, even before all that happens, to say you can't be doing that. That is violative of our basic standards for the conduct of trials. And the decision that Judge Engoron articulated, telling this defendant that he cannot continue to do that, brought up to the Court of Appeals, the State Court of Appeals in New York, and the State Court of Appeals just this past week affirming the capacity of Judge Engoron to restrict the defendant, Donald Trump, from saying these kinds of things, affirming this notion that just because you have some First Amendment rights does not mean that you've got an unfettered right. It is not an unconditioned right when you are a defendant, civilly or criminally, in this case, civilly, to say whatever you want about court staff. The Court of Appeals in New York just this past week announcing that it is affirming the lower court decision. Now, Donald Trump may take that up and seek further review of that in New York. But Judge Engoron announced that during the course of the proceedings and indicated that he is going to enforce that vigorously and aggressively in the coming days. We'll see what he does if indeed Donald Trump fails in that forum to follow the directives now of an appeals court in the state of New York, telling him that he cannot, and under the Constitution, he does not have the right to engage in this kind of violative language. A couple of other things also coming out of federal courts, these both in the District of Columbia, also in the tradition of the rule of law and justice that animates us to this day, from the tradition of Sandra Day O'Connor and others. First, in the federal criminal case pending before Judge Tanya Chutkan. Tanya Chutkan, again, she is presiding over this federal criminal case brought by special counsel Jack Smith. This four-count indictment alleging a singular defendant, Donald Trump, having violated federal law when it comes to election interference. This is a big one. It's going to trial, presumably, in March of this coming year. Along the way, just this past week, a petition by the defense pending for a while, challenging whether or not Donald Trump would have an absolute claim of immunity because of his status as the former president of the United States of America. Tanya Chutkan, just this past week, saying clearly, dispositively, he is not immune from this prosecution for his election interference, and nothing about the present status of his candidacy undermines that. Tanya Chutkan amounts to a sharp rejection of the challenges that the Trump defense team has articulated up to this time in support of the dismissal of this case. That's not happening. When we come back after this top of the hour break, I'll tell you more about what Tanya Chutkan said in dismissing this notion that somehow he is immune from this criminal prosecution. And then we'll talk about a civil case in which an appeals court, also in the District of Columbia, adopted that same concept, likewise to permit a civil case to go forward. Stay with us for that further discussion here on our Saturday morning broadcast.
Liney Lodge and Carson Park, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown
and all of Wisconsin.
93.5 The Tap. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Linda Kenyon. Israel is urging Palestinian civilians to